during the discussion at the Home Affairs Portfolio Committee. I think receive our greetings from the committee. We are meeting today on the 25th of June to consider, I think there is one item before us. But we're meeting today as members of parliament with the condolences that we have sent to the family that has laid to rest one of our members of parliament today, Honorable Dora. And we still say that our condolences to the family and friends. We are meeting today just a day after the Minister of Finance has just given an adjustment budget the financial year. We are also meeting today when Cabinet and the President of the Republic of South Africa are still hard at work trying to find even further solutions and further solutions for the pandemic that has beset South Africa and the whole world, which is called coronavirus. We would like to reiterate that we have trust in the leadership of the President and all the decisions that are taken by Cabinet and the command Council. Had they not taken some of this decision, I think we'll be in another state of affairs, but we have trust and confidence in the leadership of the Cabinet of the Republic of South Africa under President Cyril Ramaphosa. And our agenda today is going to be opening by the chair, and then from there we'll go to apologies. And then from there, we're going to take this presentation. After the presentation, then we'll allow the minister to be the first to lead us in terms of what needs to be done. I'm saying this because there has been a debate whether the IEC reports to the Department of Home Affairs. Now that it is accounting to the portfolio of Home Affairs, many think that it also reports to the department. But we know for the fact, in terms of the constitution, it is a Chapter 9 institution. And this is a Chapter 9 institution, it does report to the speaker directly. So the minister is in because he's the minister responsible. If there is any legislation that must be presented by the executive into parliament, Minister Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi will be the champion or the one responsible for ensuring that we take through the legislation. And before we take apologies, we are meeting today as part of the response of the June 11 court judgment, which indeed was supposed to be presented before the elections, but it was then postponed to be presented later. And then on the 11th of June, it was that day that it was presented. But it is a matter that, as a portfolio committee, as you all know, we have been asking the IEC that there is a matter that is in court that will need our consideration that will need our further engagement. But now it's already a court judgment. This court judgment has a variety of implication, members. It has legal implication. It has financial implication. It has the practical implications. Legal implication in a sense that if we're to deal with it, it impacts on a number of other pieces of legislation that the legislature has already enacted in the previous years. The financial implication is that we'll need Parliament and or IEC and or the department will have to increase the budget, make it even much more so that we can cater for what the court has already requested us to deal with. So those are kind of the implications that we have, and we have called on the IEC today to talk to us about their reaction to this, the implication, whatever implication, be it legal or practical or financial. But those who have been in Parliament for some time, you'll know that there were issues that related to our electoral regime that were discussed, and there were some reports. Fanzile Slapet report is one of the reports that spoke about this matter, but obviously without any legislative finality. So the judgment, depending, we want to rule get, and we have invited members of the legal services of Parliament. Because from getting after this report, after this briefing from the IEC, we will also have to get the Parliament's view on how must we do things, or the roadmap with which we must take this matter forward. And what does it mean generally? A number of people wrote to me via email and others WhatsApp. They were questioning and asking whether it was the duty of the court to direct Parliament as it is directed, or to direct, or even to talk about this electoral discrepancies, if you want. I have explained that the role of the judiciary in this country, it is indeed to interpret the law. But in interpreting the law, the courts will always make the law. So that is the relationship that we have. And we in this country are running what we call a constitutional democracy. Constitutional democracy means that the constitutional court will be the final arbiter in terms of pronouncing on constitutionality of decisions that are made by the executive and Parliament. So anyone wants to engage into a discussion whether the court has done this or that, it will be a discussion for another day, because, or is a discussion for political parties to deal with in terms of where they want in the future a parliamentary democracy or a constitutional democracy. But as we speak now, we are dealing with what we call constitutional democracy, and we are engulfed and expected by the Constitution of the Republic to act as such and make sure that we respond in a manner that the constitutional court directs us to. We have requested our researchers, members, to look into this matter, because we've got to get a lot of collection of information, research in terms of what may be happening in the nearby countries. For an example, Botswana, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and so on, so that we're able to get into this conversation. Because this judgment will is forcing us to get into a conversation. Conversation as political parties in the Republic, and to get into conversation with the South Africans on what kind of an electoral regime do we want to see, and how do we envisage to get there. We have been given 24 months to get into this conversation and finalize a draft legislation. But obviously, we're not sure whether the 24 months is enough. But our discussions, as well as beginning these discussions, will begin to guide whether or not the 24 months is enough. But once the court has pronounced in terms of these kind of issues, we are compelled as the legislature to start to implement as the court has generally directed. There are a number of issues, colleagues, that comes with the judgment and the questions that comes with the judgment. If we were to allow independent candidates, other question will be, what happens if an independent candidate dies? Do you go to by-elections? How do you go about? In a ward system, as you all know, an independent candidate will call a meeting in that ward and account. Because what the Constitution promotes is the issue of accountability. In the ward system, it's easy to account. What happens if we have allowed independent in the provincial or national sphere to contest? How do we promote the accountability of having to call meetings to tell your constituents that we have already taken the following decisions in government? But this is a conversation that will start from the committee. It will escalate to wherever it will have to escalate to until we have enacted the legislation. I must say this, that shortly after the court gave the judgment, I then got through my email people sponsoring draft legislations to be considered by parliament and so on. And they said, I thought we're still going to get into a conversation, but maybe there are people who anticipated this, and but we will engage without fear, favor, or prejudice into any sort of input that we get from members of the South African public, political parties, and so on and so forth. I think we'll be able to engage. We'll engage in a manner that it's orderly, and in a manner that protect and promote the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. So we're starting off with the meeting. I am going to take the apologies if they are there. From there, then we can get to the presentation. Shortly after the presentation, I'll allow the Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, to make his input to the presentation. Apologies.
Chair, I've got two apologies. One is Ms. Lekhwase. She said she's at home. There's a funeral. And then the second one is Ms. Van der Merwe. She's joining us late. She's at the Social Development Committee, which started also at 6 o'clock. So she'll join us in the course of the meeting. That's all.
Chairperson.
Honorable Makova.
Mine is not an apology. I seek for your indulgence. I would like to join you on your opening remarks on condolences also to another member of parliament, Tanti Mpambo Sibokwana, whose funeral is tomorrow. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, no, thank you very much. Thank you very much. We have learned of that of that condolences. I think we as a committee do also send our condolences. Thank you very much, Honorable McGlover. Can we take the presentation, Chairperson Mashinini, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Advocate Bongo, Honorable Minister Dr. Mtsoaledi and the Deputy Minister present, Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. On behalf of the Commission, I wish to thank you for this invitation to brief the Committee on the judgment of the Constitutional Court handed down on the 11th of June 2020, which judgment in essence declared sections of the Electoral Act unconstitutional, in that it does not provide for independent candidates to contest national and provincial elections except by way of political party list. Before we continue, Chair, with this presentation, allow me to introduce members of the Electoral Commission and the administrative team present with us in this virtual meeting. Chair, we are joined by the Vice Chairperson of the Commission, Ms. Janet Love, together with Dr. Nomsa Masuhu, as well as Judge Pillay and Commissioner Sutu Miepa. And from our administration, I'm joined by our CEO, Mr. Mamabolo, and together with his deputies, Mr. Shibori and Mr. Masango, as well as Mr. Mosri. On behalf of our team, we would like to express our appreciation to the Portfolio Committee for this opportunity to engage regarding this landmark Constitutional Court judgment. Honorable Chair and members, let me state at the outset that we are indeed a constitutional democracy, as the Honorable Chair stated earlier on. Therefore, the Electoral Commission welcomes the ruling of our country's highest court, which has provided the necessary clarity regarding the rights of citizens to stand for election at all levels of government without limitation or constraint to forming or belonging to a political party. And this is a fundamental and groundbreaking decision which will have far-reaching and significant impact on the South African democracy landscape, as well as impacting on our electoral system for many years to come. In this regard, it is perhaps one of the most important judgments by our courts in respect of the electoral democracy and our electoral system since the dawn of our democracy. And it's been about 14 days since the court handed down its majority judgment, consenting judgment and the minority dissenting judgment. And we, along with other interested stakeholders, are continuing to study these judgments to fully appreciate and understand the possible implications for our electoral system and the legislative framework, which is part of the process that this Portfolio Committee has now embarked on. And to assist us in this regard, the Commission has sought urgent analysis and assessment of the judgment through our erstwhile advocate, Bartlander, and senior counsel, Bartlander, and advocate, Lutuli, and which we received earlier this week, and which we have already shared with the committee and the committee members. Now, a summary of the views, along with our own initial preliminary thoughts, will shortly be shared with the committee after these introductory remarks. Honorable members, I think what I could just bring in the remarks is that from the outset, it is important to note that the Concord did not pronounce on how Parliament should rectify the unconstitutionality of the Act. Nor did it express itself on any preferred model for electoral system. And indeed, it expressly and correctly left this to Parliament to determine. And I think this concurs with the earlier remarks that the Chair has pointed out, that the legislative component would actually come from the elected representatives. Equally, the Commission does not have a preferred model and does not seek to steer Parliament in any particular direction. Rather, we stand ready to assist with implementing whatever electoral system and amendments to the Act and others, if necessary, as decided by Parliament. What we can do and do offer is our technical expertise as an electoral management body, as well as access to regional and international benchmarking and thought leadership on various models of electoral systems and their possible implications. This can be a vital tool, we believe, in helping Parliament to reflect on the various alternatives, the pros and cons, and then to implement the ruling of the courts. These would be actually in advisory support, and which will include helping Parliament to understand the various political, legislative, structural systems, processes, and resources, and many other implications of the various alternatives. My apologies, it would appear I've got a technical challenge for now. I don't know if I've been still audible.
Yes, we are audible.
Oh, thank you. My apologies, there was some technical glitch. Honorable Chair and members, as we all know, the court has provided us 24 months or Parliament to conduct this exercise and amend necessary legislation. Now, this, given the potential scope of the work and the widespread interest and the necessary due processes that must be followed, which would involve political parties, civil society, the media, the electorate, this really is going to be a tyranny of time to be able for us to meet the target. And the time that is available is even more constrained when one considers that following any amendments passed by Parliament, a variety of amendments may be required to our system, processes, training, logistics, along with those of political parties, in order to prepare for the 2024 national and provincial elections. And we cannot overemphasize that the time therefore will become very much of essence, because these elections are less than 4 years away, and usually it takes average 18 to 24 months for the commission to prepare for the elections under normal circumstances. And so this then makes it a critical imperative that the parliament, under the leadership of the portfolio committee, will have to ensure we are in compliance. In conclusion, Chair, the Commission is encouraged and grateful that we've been offered and made the opportunity for immediate engagement with the committee on these critical issues. And we as the Commission, we stand ready and are looking forward to make our considered inputs in the process that would be necessary to assist the Parliament. And we do look forward to all the engagements to come. Now, through you, Chair, I would now like to invite our Chief Electoral Officer to take us through now the unpacking of the judgment itself through to the operational implications that we have to take into consideration going forward. Once more again, Honourable Chair and Honourable Minister, Deputy Ministers and Members, on behalf of the Commission, would like to thank you for this opportunity. I thank you.
Over to you, CEO. Mr. Mamabolo.
Chairperson, he needs to unmute.
Sir, you are muted.
Over to you, Mr. Mamabolo.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson of the committee, for the opportunity. And I want to extend greetings to the minister and the deputy minister, members of the committee and members of the commission. Now, in terms of the presentation, if the purpose is as follows, is to provide a succinct analysis of the judgment, to identify the responsibilities that arise from this judgment for Parliament, and then to provide a high-level operational implication for the Commission, and then deal with the timeline implications. What this presentation is not about are the options on electoral systems. That we believe is a matter that can be dealt with at the later point. Now, in terms of background, the New Nation Movement, which is where the applicant in this matter, first sought the declaration of constitutional invalidity of the Electoral Act in the Western Cape High Court. In that litigation, the presidency and parliament abided the decision of the court. In other words, they did not actively oppose the application. The Minister of Home Affairs, on the other hand, opposed the application, as did the Electoral Commission. The state parties, i.e. Home Affairs and the Electoral Commission, won in that the High Court dismissed that application. And the reasoning of the court largely was that Parliament had discharged its responsibility.
Can you project? Because early on I saw you projecting the presentation. Kindly project it for the benefit of members.
Oh, okay. I thought it was projected, Chair. Let me just work it.
This is difficult. You can proceed.
May I suggest that Eddie tries to project it for us? I'm having a bit of...
Eddie, can you project it on your side, Eddie? You can proceed.
Thank you. So... So, Chair, then the applicants, after losing the case in the High Court, proceeded with a direct appeal to the Constitutional Court. And the matter was heard for agency on the 2nd of May last year, just a few days before the elections. And the court limited that hearing to the question of agency. Then the court concluded that the matter was not urgent, given how close it was to the election. And then postponed the hearing on the merits to the 15th of August, 2019. So the matter was then argued on the 15th of August, 2019. And judgment, as we now know, was delivered on the 11th of June. The attitude that the Electoral Commission adopted in this litigation was that we are agnostic as to what electoral system is chosen for South Africa, because the Constitution is very clear that ultimately the authority that is responsible for the electoral system is Parliament. However, the Commission sought to make submissions to the court on the correct legal principles that were applicable. And the thrust of our submissions in the court was, Parliament has a right to decide the electoral system. It has done so, and that system in general results in proportionality, which in our view was the critical test of constitutional compliance. And we did so on the basis that the court itself had previously held that it is undesirable that matters involving the conduct of elections should be decided without the benefit of the views of the Commission. Now, the order of court is roughly as follows. It is declared that the Electoral Act is unconstitutional to the extent that it requires that adult citizens may be elected to the National Assembly and provincial legislatures only through the membership of political parties. Importantly, the declaration of unconstitutionality referred to above is prospective with effect from the date of the order. That means this court judgment does not have retrospective effect to the extent that elections already conducted under this electoral system are unlawful. It is not so, because The order is only applicable from the moment of the judgment going forward. But its operation is suspended for 24 months to afford Parliament an opportunity to remedy the defect given rise to unconstitutionality. Sadly, the Minister of Home Affairs was settled with the applicant cost both in the High Court as well as in the Constitutional Court. Now, three separate judgments were given. In the majority judgment that was penned by Justice Mahlanga, which commanded the support of eight other judges. There was also the concurring judgment of Justice Jafta, which also commanded the support of eight other judges. The significance of these numbers is that the legal principles that have been laid down in both Jafta judgment and the Mahlanga judgment now form part of our law because of the numbers that they commanded. They're both majority judgments, and therefore they establish legal principles going forward. So both we are bound by both the legal principles that are in the Mahlanga judgment as well as the legal principles in the Jafta judgment. Then there was a dissent by Justice Froneman. Unfortunately, and perhaps regrettably, he was just a lone person in that judgment. He did not muster support of the other justices. Now, there are a number of building blocks in the reasoning of the court. In other words, the analysis that the court made to arrive at the decision that is in the court order. The first of this is that the political rights conferred under Section 19 must be read together. That means they must be read together because they are interconnected. One must read them together because they are inextricably linked to one another. Therefore, the proper understanding of those rights under Section 19, the political rights under Section 19, must start with the appreciation that Section 19(1) confers the freedom to make political choices. But in interpreting that 19(1), the court says political choices include a choice not to join or form a political party. So citizens have a right, the freedom to make political choices, which include the choice not to join or form a political party. Then they went further to say, in order to appreciate the full extent of the rights conferred in Section 19(3)(b), and Section 19(3)(b) says that an adult citizen is free to contest for political office and, if so, elected to hold such office. Now, the court said in order to appreciate the full extent of that right in Section 19(3), that must be read together with the freedom, with the right to freedom of association under Section 18. So in order to have a full appreciation of the content of Section 19(3)(b), you've got to read it in association with Section 18, which is the right to freedom of association. So the court, using its word, it says, in this context, the matter of freedom of association is inextricably linked to the content of Section 19.3b. In a sense, the court said, for you to stand for office, for political office, and to hold such office, it will be hollow if we don't concurrently understand that Section 18, the right to the freedom to associate, is not linked with this 19.3. They've got to be read together, because 18.3 gives content to 19.3b. So it is important, therefore, that they be seen together, because one gives content to the other. Now, looking at Section 18 itself, which is the freedom to associate, the court said that right protects both the right to form associations as well as the right not to associate. So that right has both the positive and the negative element. The positive element is that you have a right to make a choice to join or form an association. But in equal measure, you also have a right and the freedom not to associate if you so elect. So the court continued to say, in its traditional sense, this right is associated more with the positive than the negative element. This positive element is about the right of an individual to be free to form an association with whomsoever he or she wishes, for whatever purpose. Of course, the purpose must be one that is worthy of protection under Section 18. But importantly, the negative element is about the freedom not to associate at all, if that be the individual's choice. So the court is saying, in order to have an appreciation of Section 18, you've got to see it in two ways, both its positive as well as its negative elements. On the positive side, freedom to associate, making those choices, but on the negative side, freedom not to associate if you so desire. Now, the court continued to say, reading of Section 19.3b to limit the exercise of the right to stand for political office or having to do so through political parties would result in the infringement of other rights in the Bill of Rights. We've already spoken about the need to read the political rights under Section 19 together. Although they are discrete rights, they still have got to be read together. We've also mentioned that in interpreting the content of Section 19.3b, you needed to take into account the right to freedom of association. So the court said, you've got to understand Section 19.3b and interpret in a manner that does not infringe other rights in the Bill of Rights. And in this regard, they pointed specifically to Section 10 of the Constitution, which is the right to dignity. And the reason of the court was that the freedom to make choices goes to the heart of a person's dignity. So if you deny a person their negative rights of freedom of association, in other words, freedom not to associate, you are impairing their dignity. And to the extent that you are impairing their dignity, that is an infringement of Section 10 of the Constitution. Now, those really are the arguments that the court considered, or rather the principles that the court has outlined in their analysis of Section 19.3b. And on the basis of that, then they reached the conclusion that to the extent that the Electoral Act does not provide for a mechanism for independents to stand for public office, it's unconstitutional. So they took a human rights-based approach in interpreting Section 19.3b. Now, what then is the court saying about the role of Parliament? The court's interpretation gives primacy to the Bill of Rights in defining the scope and extent of the political rights that are protected. So in understanding the content of the rights, especially the Section 19.3b rights, the court gave the Bill of Rights primacy to come to an understanding of the full expanse of the Section 19.3b. So this limits the choices that Parliament can make under Section 46 and 105 to an electoral system that gives effect to the rights conferred under the Bill of Rights. What this means, Section 45 and Section 105 of the Constitution gives Parliament the right to determine an electoral system that is in general results in proportionality. But this judgment says in coming up with an electoral system that in general results in proportionality, we need to give primacy to all rights that are found in the Bill of Rights. And in particular, the Section 18 rights, Section 19.1 rights, as well as Section 10 rights, as well as Section 1G that deals with the values upon which that our democracy is constructed. So whilst Parliament can be at large to come up with an electoral system, there are certain limitations that this judgment has outlined. It must give primacy to the rights in the Bill of Rights. It must, in terms of the Constitution in general, result in proportionality. Because if Parliament were to come up with an electoral system that does not result in general in proportionality, that electoral system will be flouting Section 46 as well as Section 105. The court, in relation to those two provisions, the court said that the focus of the sections is on the result. This notion that the electoral system must result in general in proportional representation. So it says the focus, the sharp focus of those two provisions is the result. So it says whoever the participants may be, the system must be one that results in general in proportional representation. Now, importantly, the court says proportionality does not equal exclusive party representation. So proportionality does not equal exclusive party proportional representation. In a sense, the court is saying you can achieve general proportionality even when you give individuals opportunities to be contestants in an election. So Parliament must find a way of accommodating independence in a system that will in general result in proportionality, because proportionality does not mean exclusive party proportional representation. Now, there are other matters that the court raised which implicate other provisions of the Constitution, where the Constitution makes reference to political parties. Section 57(2), 116, 178, 1H, 193(5), 236, and Schedule 2B. And the court says this must be viewed, these provisions that mention political parties in the Constitution must be viewed in the light of the founding values, one of which implicitly denounces one-party governance for South Africa and expressly decrees that the Republic is founded on the value of multi-party system of democratic government. So the fact that the Constitution in this section that we have outlined mentions only political parties, that is true, but in the opinion of the court or in the determination of the court, that only serves to denounce one-party governance for South Africa. It in and of itself, these provisions do not amount to the exclusion of independent candidates. They only serve to denounce the possibility of a one-party system for South Africa. So these provisions don't mean that the Constitution envisages an exclusive party proportional representation system to the total exclusion of independent candidates. Now, if we move on to section 1572A, this section 1572A says that, or it gives two possibilities for local government, exclusively for local government, that parliament can establish an electoral system for local government that is based exclusively on party proportional system, or parliament can come up with an electoral system that is based on party proportional system mixed with ward components. So it is there in the section 1572A. And Parliament, as we now know, has elected to have a system in local government that includes a PR component as well as the ward component. So the court's determination was that option of having exclusively a party representation system for local government, just as an option, is a discrete and narrow limitation on Section 18 and 19 rights. So it's an internal limitation within the Constitution. It's not a limitation via a statute, an ordinary act of Parliament, but it's a limitation that is introduced in the Constitution.
Yeah, 5 minutes left.
Let's move. So the point that I think the judgment is saying here is that as regards local government, it's mentioned in the Constitution, so it's an internal limitation within the Constitution and therefore permissible. To the extent that you don't have equivalent provisions for national and provincial elections, you can't do it in a statute, in an ordinary statute. Now, if we move on, Chair, to Justice Jafta, remember we did say that Justice Jafta commanded support of 8 other judges. So the principles that the judgment outlines are equally applicable. So he says that in unequivocal terms, Section 19 should be confers upon every other citizen the right to stand for public office and if so elected to hold office. Importantly, he says, whilst Parliament has the power to pass legislation that regulates the exercise of the right, it cannot enact legislation that prevents the exercise of that right. And in the present form, the Electoral Act does not allow every other South African to exercise the right to contest on their own. Now, Justice Froneman, he was the lone voice, like we indicated. He concludes that based on the constitutional values and other constitutional norms, it seems fair to conclude that the right to stand and hold elective office in terms of Section 19(3)(b) is an individual right to represent the people in a multi-party system through the medium of political parties that results in general in proportional representation. But this is a losing opinion. Now, there are huge implications for the IEC in this judgment. First of all, is the number of ICT business applications. The applications that we currently have been predicated on the current electoral system. Candidates nomination system is predicated on lists. The result system for purposes of capturing results, doing seat allocation and seat assignment, all those are geared within the logic and the framework of the proportional representation system. Our logistics information system is the case as well. Now, depending on the nature of the new electoral system and what Parliament decides to do, the number and size of ballots will be implicated. If, for instance, constituencies are introduced notionally, it would mean you'd have to have a constituency ballot which is different from one constituency to the other. And again, if constituencies introduced, there will be a possible delimitation of constituencies. And then the other implication is that our staff will have to be retrained. Again, there's a possible reconfiguration of the local offices of the IEC, then because you'll then need to have the constituency offices to be able to support operations within the constituency. Counting and the declaration of results will be similarly so affected, as well as the modalities of voting. I mean, it may mean that we'll have to consider other ways of doing voting, given the potential increase in the number of ballots that may be required. So all these things put together, they point to a huge budget implication, because systems that have been created over the past 25 years now needs to be undone and new ones created. Then if you look at the implications and you look at the impact on the electoral cycle, there are three phases in the electoral cycle. Is the pre-election period, is the election period, and the post-election period. So the electoral system runs through all those three phases of the electoral cycle. Currently, we are in the phase of the legal framework, because this matter pertains to the legal framework. Then it's got huge budget and financing implications and the manner in which we construct the electoral calendar. So the entirety of the whole spectrum of electoral activities will be implicated by this judgment. Now, finally, Chair, is the issue of timelines. It has been mentioned that Parliament has 24 months to remedy the defect in the Electoral Act. However, this period is likely not to be enough, because as the chairperson indicated in his opening address, that it takes us a minimum of 24 months to prepare for an election. So we've got to finalize the issue of the electoral system much earlier, so as we can go and rebuild the ICT application and replan the whole electoral cycle in terms of the cycle that I've just shown. So there is a need to really start the process immediately, so that we don't wait for the full 24 months to deal with it, because otherwise we'll be left with little time to prepare for the elections in 2024. Just to illustrate the point, the MDB needs about 24 months to draw municipal wards from an existing base. Now, for the new constituencies, there is no base from which to work. As an example, should the system eventually conclude that we need constituencies. And there's got to be consultation processes, there's got to be objection processes, and so on. So this new electoral system means reconstructing the whole electoral infrastructure that has been built over the years, and it also involves rewriting business applications. And so on. So as a commission, we really wish to urge Parliament to start immediately with this huge task, so that we don't wait for the full 24 months to expire before we start working. And lastly, Chair, as the chairperson said, we want to reiterate that the commission is ready to assist Parliament as it navigates this issue. We offer our technical to assist Parliament and other stakeholders in their quest to comply to the electoral to the Constitutional Court judgment. But the need to draft a roadmap to the ultimate end point is necessary. Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, CEO. Mr. Machine, you want to say something? Unmute yourself. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I think that would be all for at this stage.
Thank you very much. Honorable Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi.
Thank you. Chairperson, well, all I could say is that I agree with the Commission, Chair, that we need to start as early as possible. And two things have just been pointed out. Yesterday in the Cabinet, the Minister of Justice brought this judgment. Brought this judgment to the attention of the Cabinet, because he does so after every ruling. And the Cabinet decided that the Department of Home Affairs must prepare a document unpacking this legislation, showing all the implications, and make a proposal to cabinet, including choosing a committee of ministers, because not only one minister can get involved with this. Propose a committee of ministers who will sit, interrogate the issues, and keep on advising cabinet on the next step. Obviously, is towards promulgating legislation, which cabinet will pass and send to the legislature. The second thing that happened today is that I received a letter from the chief legal advisor of parliament to the effect that, if I may read just the last paragraph, he was mentioning about this defect and the judgment, and he said to correct the defect will require significant policy development. Kindly, urgently confirm the policy and legislative development plan that the Department of Home Affairs intend to implement in order to address the above-mentioned defect. This plan will be provided to the relevant portfolio committee for consideration in their programming plan. So that's where we are. It means the Department of Home Affairs must sit down, and I can confirm that we have already asked legal advisors to start that process, which I said starts with cabinet, but also will be given to you in terms of significant policy development. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Honorable members, we're going to take members in the following order. Honorable Janji, number one. Honorable Tito, number two. Honorable Kanyile, number three. Honorable McGrover, number four. Honorable Lekwata, number five. Honorable Modise, number six. Honorable Ross, number seven. Honorable Muela, number eight. Honorable Mulikwa, number nine. Honorable Chabane, number 10. Honorable Judge.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairman Bongo. Thank you very much. Let me thank the minister for his quick remarks, but let me thank the presentation from both the chair of the commission and the CEO. It's quite a very comprehensive presentation, and it's very helpful, I must say. I just want to raise three issues, Chair, and I want to start differently with a proposal. I think which has been hinted both by the minister and the CEO. I propose that as a matter of urgency, Chair, we are going to need an integrated roadmap. We're going to need an integrated roadmap made up of the following three role players. Firstly, the executive, as the minister was indicating, it's going to be important that the minister is able to come back to us urgently in outlining the kind of steps, the kind of actions that they are going to take, and to give a timeline on all of those issues. The IEC has just indicated that there are operational implications. I would want to urge that they too, as part of that integrated roadmap, they begin to unpack what these operational implications are. And because I'm doing this, Chair, I don't want us to operate on gut feeling. The gut feeling says 24 months is not enough. We must allow facts to indicate whether it's 24 months or it's 36 months or it's 48 months, but that must be based on the facts put down, not just a feeling that it's not enough. And therefore, I think the IEC will have to tabulate and pack all of in this kind of a roadmap. These are the kind of things that we're going to need to do. They have just given us headlines today of what they consider as operational implications. We're going to need to see those things unpacked, presented in front of us as part of this roadmap. Parliament, as the third role player, has got the legal team and our committee section must come back to us to say, with what the executive is going to do, with what the IEC says it will do, this is the amount of time once the executive is done with the bill or whatever that Parliament will have to take to deal with this. And I'm calling it integrated roadmap, which is a very good opportunity that we don't work in silos as the three role players. And that for me, Chair, depending on how soon they can do that, I would not have a problem because both the minister and the CEO were saying the sooner we start, the better. Now, the sooner we start, the better for me means, are you ready in a week's time or 2 weeks' time to present to this portfolio committee this integrated roadmap so that by the time we go on recess, we would have seen this and attend to it. That's my first point, Chair, that I want to make. Maybe as a conclusion on that integrated roadmap, what we also need in that roadmap as a separate overarching issue is what I call the risk register. All of them have spoken about implications. So we need to have this integrated roadmap that says, here are the risks that we have step by step for us in this period to achieve this, so that when was the possibility here, Chair, says once we have that integrated roadmap with clear kind of timelines and the kind of activities and the milestones in it, we might have to approach the Constitutional Court depending on what the timelines say. Then we say in terms of what we've put together as these role players, we think that 36 months is doable, or more than 36 months is doable, but that will be based on the facts we put in front of us. So that's just my first point I wanted to raise as a proposal. The second point I wanted to raise as a comment is that what is in front of us from the presentation, from reading the judgment, presentation by the IEC and the remarks by the minister, is that the Constitutional Court says to us, you must go and fix these sections in the electoral system because they are inconsistent with the provisional, with the constitutional provision. That's one. So two, the Constitutional Court with this judgment is not replacing the electoral system of South Africa. That electoral system of the country remains. But what this judgment has done has enriched our own electoral system. So in this sense, we must put aside our own anxieties and our own excitement about the judgment. It is not replacing the electoral system of South Africa that we have. It is saying, based on our own constitutional provisions, these areas are inconsistent with this. My third point, Chair, as the last point, is that it's very clear this judgment that political parties have a work to do, certainly from the party that I come from, in line with what you have said. We have a lot of homework to reflect on this judgment, including understanding deeper what these implications are, because the party that I come from has always said that the people shall govern. It has always said that we have representative democracy as well as participatory democracy. And what this judgment is putting in front of us, it does not contradict any of those kind of issues. So, Chair, without being long, I thought I must just make those points, and I'm looking forward to the process of us amending and making this kind of law, because certainly it is also challenging us on the issue of pluralism, which includes both your collective organized formation in the form of parties, but also individuals. As well, I think the CEO has put it very nicely, the issue of multi-party democratic system has been raised in the constitution as against the issue of the one-party system. But we're not there yet. We're coming to that point about when we get down and deal with the details. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Tito.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I only have one question. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. If the national elections are to be according to a mixed proportional representation, could it not be a good time to reconsider having a single combined election every 5 years with the view to have to save costs to offset the increased potential cost of supporting individual candidates? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kanyel.
Good evening, Chairperson. I do apologize for not activating my video. I have a very poor network today. I'd like to take this opportunity to greet you, Chairperson, the Minister, the representatives from the IEC, as well as our colleagues. I think I'm covered on the first question that was raised by Honorable Janji in terms of the time frame that was given by the court. If the IEC thinks the time frame is going to be enough, and hopefully we are going to get a presentation in future that indicates exactly when they're going to start with the implementation process and together with the timeframes, as Honorable Janji has already alluded. Another question that I have is that how will the ballot papers be drawn up? And are we going to have separate ballot papers for the independent candidates? And the last question that I have, Chairperson, is that what will happen when an independent candidate no longer qualifies for the seat that they won, or when they die during the term and the seat becomes vacant? I think those are the questions that I have that we will need the IEC to give us direction on. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Honorable Matluba.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies also for my screen due to signal. I actually want to start with the very last closure remarks by the presentation. It says the Commission is ready to assist Parliament. And I almost wanted to say, Chair, that Parliament is actually ready to assist the Commission. Because the problem that we are facing here, we are having a report, we are having a ruling of the court, which has huge and a huge implications and also a huge impact on the electoral system. And that, Mr. Mashinini, it also warrants a bold statement from the IEC on the readiness and also on compliance. This is what's short here today in this presentation, whether the IEC is ready or not. This case is not coming on since yesterday. It's almost now for 20 years in this case. And we must also remember we are a department through the minister that actually also opposed this. And as a result, we are sitting here where we are sitting here today. We talk about alternative voting methods that has been, we've been told. We've been told about benchmarking. There is no time frames in all of this. And yes, all the parties must play their role as far as this is concerned. We also say that when it comes to postpone the elections, which some political parties already have spoken out on this, if the election's going to be postponed, and we also have the pandemic, and we would want the IEC also to explain how they're going to deal with benchmarking while you have the pandemic. There is constraints of budgets. There is training has been mentioned. And then we have legislation. We have legislation and we also have a manpower problem within the IEC and within our legal fraternity. Yes, of course, when you look and ask a question how the ballot paper will look like, when we visited the office, we've been shown the DRC ballot paper. I will never forget that. But it also depends on the system that we are going to use. So, you know, someone talk about before we go into constituency time, I think for the IEC, there will be no rest. There will be no constituency time, even for some members, for what it's worth, to comply. But I think we need a bold statement from the IEC. We are coming along with this thing to say to this country, we are ready. The court has made the ruling, we are ready, or no, we are not ready. I think this is what we need here today in terms of that statement. And even on the combined elections, the IEC must speak out on their view as far as combined elections is concerned. Because we believe, the DA believe, we have local government election is one of the most fear of government when it comes to service delivery. And it will be a mess having a combined election, local government, provincial and election, also considering the fact that we, most of the time and in most by-elections and elections, that we are just struggling to get it right. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Honorable Likwaja. Honorable Likwaja.
Audible, sir. Hello. Hello.
Yes, you can proceed.
Can you hear me? Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Yes.
Chairperson, first of all, let me say that I can hear the concern by those who think we don't have enough time. And let me say that when we struggled for freedom, we didn't have a time frame within which it would be achieved. But that it had to be achieved had to be so. Here too, the Constitution, in the Constitution, we enshrined these rights that are here. And it doesn't matter how long, but these rights must be made accessible to the people of South Africa. Many of us are almost at the end of our lives, but it's very important that we live for generations to come. A constitution that will ensure that all of those who will follow us in this country will enjoy these rights and they will not be compromised. So I just want to say, I think we must not make time an excuse not to do what we are supposed to do for the people of South Africa. The second point I'd like to make is that we must not hide behind the IEC, because the Independent Electoral Commission is technicians, it is experts, it's people that we have identified to help us implement what we are going to tell them we want for the people of South Africa. In fact, it is the legislature that's going to tell them, what system we want. If it does not exist yet, we will create it. And we must create it so that we do that which we want for the people of South Africa. When our forebears declared that when we achieve our freedom, the people shall govern, They had thought that out very well. And let's remind ourselves, the people will govern. The people must govern. And this is what this constitution says. We have not done so for some considerable time. There has been abuse of power for a long time. We can no longer allow that, and I think the Constitutional Court has put its finger on the nub of the problem. So we must work on this thing without compromise, that we want it to be right. Now, I am thrilled that I hear some of the opinions that are being raised, because it does show that all of us realize that if we need to take a bit more time, we will be willing and will be ready to do so. And I dare say, Chairperson, that we are ready. And let us go to this work no one must think that they are rushing to have some structure that will suit certain objectives and things like that. No, it's not, that'd be the waste of time. We are going to do this, that when it is done, political power must be, people must be able to put political power in the hands of those who are committed to work for them. And when it does happen, that we find that there are people who we have placed in power, but they have abandoned that which we instructed them, or that we voted them for, or that which they promised us, if they are no longer doing it, we must be in a position to remove them and get other people who will be ready to do that. I thank you, sir. I really want to say this for this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Veteran Lukota. Honorable Mudisa. Honorable Mudisa. I'm passing Honorable Mudisa. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair. Can you see me? Sorry, yes. I've got a bit of a mic crisis over here, but hopefully you can see my face.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if the parliamentary legal can step in. But I'd first just like to ask a question about the case itself and the reason why Home Affairs and the IEC opposed the application. Now, the IEC said it wasn't opposing on the merits, that it was opposing on things like the urgency and the fact that a judgment could affect the 2019 elections. So my question is really, did the Home Affairs and IEC have to oppose the application to make these submissions? You know, there were a few submissions about an appropriate cost order and the uniform rules of court and that kind of thing. Was it necessary to oppose the application if there wasn't a disagreement on the merits? And then was it this opposition that resulted in the cost order against Home Affairs? Or would Home Affairs have probably had to pay all the costs either way? Now, going into our response, one of the things that came to mind and I'd like clarity on, we have a number of acts to do with political parties. So the Political Party Funding Act, the public funding of represented political parties, and even things like the Judicial Service Commission. I mean, it requires at least three persons from opposition parties. So will simultaneous amendments also have to be made to this legislation and other legislation because of the changes now to introducing independent candidates? And then more directly to Home Affairs, what bothers me here is we knew this was coming. I think Honorable McGlure already alluded to that. There was the Motlanthe report of 2017, which specifically recommended that Parliament put together a system or electoral system with defined constituencies and proportional representation, a constituency system. So that was about 2.5 years ago. And the Van Zyl-Slabbert report was 17 years ago. So surely this Van Zyl-Slabbert report should serve as the policy basis, or will you start again from scratch in terms of developing a policy for elections? And then in closing, Chair, I have to say, I must add that I do not agree with your opening statement that says that we all agree with the decisions of the Command Council. And I think we must really stop saying that the committee agreed when several people on the committee voiced specific objections, and rather say a majority of the committee said. Because to my view, the National Command Council has made devastating decisions with negligible scientific basis, and it's a body not accountable to Parliament. And what's happening to Home Affairs clients under these regulations are crippling. I mean, we can't be satisfied when people's human rights, and especially the right to dignity, are being trampled on. I mean, people are having to beg for their passports at the moment. Citizens were prevented from returning to where they work and their families for weeks and weeks and weeks. And now when they're allowed to return, there's just chaos in terms of what the process is. I mean, people have to keep asking, you know, MPs turn into the call center because there isn't just one clear message that says this is how you now apply to get out. This is the document that you need. South African citizens overseas, they're becoming illegal subjects to deportation. And so we cannot really say we're satisfied with this. I'm certainly not. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mwela.
Yes, Chair. How are you, Honorable Chair? Good evening, Honorable Members.
Good evening, Honorable DP.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I appreciate the opportunity, Honorable Chair, and I welcome the presentation and the additions made by the Honorable Minister, especially what the Honorable Minister has highlighted. I think it is helpful, Honorable Chair. I've got only one matter because Honorable Chanchi covered me in most of the issues. The one matter that I think we need, I'm not so sure if we had a problem, it was my network, it might have passed in the process. The issue of constituency offices, how are they going to operate, the IEC constituency offices? If I can be taken on board on that one, Honorable Minister and the officials from the IEC. That's the only matter that I think for now. If I can be clarified on that one, I'll be comfortable. But I was covered by Honorable Chanchi in most of the issues. Honorable Advocate Bongo Thomas, thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Molekwa. Honorable Molekwa.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Let me start by appreciating the presentation made by the Minister and the IEC regarding the court ruling by the Constitutional Court. Now, Chairperson, given the processes that need to be undertaken by IEC as outlined in the slide of the timeline, the MD processes, MDB processes, consultation processes, and so on. I just want to check with the IEC, as we are approaching the local government election for 2021, what will be the impact of these processes towards the local government election? The second question, Chairperson, I want to check with IEC also on how soon can the IEC make available a draft amendment bill in order to comply with the court deadline. And my last question, Chairperson, will be, how will be the allocation of the seats and the National Assembly and the provincial legislature if this court ruling is being implemented. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Mudisa. Honorable Mudisa. I am passing. Honorable Chabani.
No, thanks very much, Chairperson. I also want to appreciate and welcome the presentation of the IEC led by Chairperson Mashinini and the CEO Mamabolo. Also, Chair, noting the court judgment. I have only one, three issues, Chair, but just to start with one point, Honorable Ross raised a matter that was not presented by the IEC, and I thought it was important to rebut his views, because it's misplaced within the context of what we're discussing today. And it's unfortunately that his views are not assisting us to move forward in the government. We must reaffirm, Chair, our appreciation to the President of the Republic and the Command Council on the continuous work that we, given the short space of time amidst this COVID-19. I think all of us must take collective responsibility and objectivity on the efforts that have been taken by the President. We note challenges that will be continuously identified in the course of action of implementing the program that has to mitigate this COVID-19. So the Honorable Loss has misplaced his statement. Chair, on the second point, Chair, I think tomorrow we're celebrating the 65th anniversary of the Freedom Charter, which it all along has informed the policy direction of the African National Congress. And the provisions that are placed in which this presentation affirm what you pronounced, Chair, as you open, that the people shall govern. And that interpretation gives effect to the roles that we must play as members of parliament within the context of what we are directed as provided by the Freedom Charter. And I think it's placed correctly within that the context on how we must all of us collectively move forward to make sure that the judgment is being implemented and placed for the people of our country. Chairperson, when we conducted an oversight of the home IEC last year, and the IEC did post chat around the possibility of this judgment. And at that time, the IEC also has pronounced its readiness on the implementation on whatever outcome that judgment is going to be ensued, noting that their readiness is going to be depending on the final pronouncement of Parliament or the process of Parliament that will give effect to the directive on how they must implement the laws that will be have resolved and adopting on the modalities that we need to move forward given the directive of the judgment. We must take note of their readiness. And we must take note of the chairperson's input, opinion, when he indicated that the IEC, as an institution independent within the provision of the our legislation legislation process, is ready to offer both technical and other services to enhance our work in order to meet this deadline of the judgment. We must, chairperson, affirm the input that the Honorable Janji has provided. I think that is a profound approach in line with what the Mr. Mamabolo has proposed in the provision. The minister and the initiative that the cabinet has already taken off in order to start the process for us, all of us, to able to do that. So we may need to affirm that proposal of Honorable Janji on the three stakeholders that is identified that will give effect to process this decision and able to have a final process in Parliament in terms of how we're going to deal with the modalities of this area. Honorable Lukota is correct that it's us that are going to enforce and give directive on the implementation moving forward of the election process. The last point, Chair, my question is that, not a question, but I think just an understanding, as we'll be entering more understanding once the stakeholders of team are also combined thoughts in order to deal with this process. Just on the area of political party funding, Chair, perhaps the IEC may need to expand more. What will be then to be the implication in terms of the costs and other resource planning, given the limitations of resources that are there. But I think that once the Parliament has outlined its process and pronounced on the directive of how the IEC has to implement, but just to give effect to the this political party funding, now that has not been mostly in effect. We welcome, Chairperson, the initiative by Cabinet. The only area that I think, Chair, we need to resolve in a process of moving forward is the time frame that the committee may need to establish both with the Cabinet and the IEC on the action plans, how I'm going to move forward in order for us to try to meet the deadline, the informants deadline that have been given by legislation. As Honorable Janji indicated that when we are not able to meet that time frame, but we must have adequate facts and basis of our arguments in terms of extension of time once all the stakeholders have conference, all the issues and facts, but the master plan there is needed, Chair, and action plan on how we need to move forward. Those are, Chairperson, are all my initiative comments on the matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chabane. Honorable Mshaku.
Oh, thank you very much, Chairperson. I thought you forgot about me. I did, raise my hand, but thank you very much for the opportunity. And, as the last speaker, I think that most of my colleagues have actually captured a lot of my question, especially my colleague from the Economic Freedom Fighter, Commissioner Ululato. I don't know if the IEC will be able to please maybe answer that question, because I think on the other platform we did sort of ask it in terms of saying that because on the slide 18, he says that this process of introduction of the PR will result in the cost, in the increase of the cost. So we are saying is that is it possible also they look on the idea of combination of the election, both the national elections and the local government elections, because going through the constitution, the legal framework, there's nothing that is actually stopping the country in terms of going through that. Because if you look into the budget that has been set aside for elections, which is about they allocated about 1.5 billion in each and every election roughly. So if you maybe combine one election, you might probably you save a couple of billions, or you can say a couple of million. So we think that we're in the process, maybe we're looking in terms of being able to comply with the constitution. We have to look really in terms of what can we do in terms, is there a possibility that we can combine the election? Because it's the same work that is being done in the Mutlande report and the Funds Yoslabet report in terms of recommendation of this introduction of the PR in the national and the province. There was
I mean, after 1994, you had the national elections happened. And then after that, there was, you know, you had to eliminate wards and come up with the municipality. So there was a lot of processes that were involved that were supposed to be leading up into the election. So there was a committee that was established to look into that, but it was delayed. So there was terms of having this election happening at the same time. There was that a delay in terms of the committee that was established then to finalize its work. So maybe we should be looking into as the committee as well. As the Economic Freedom Fighters, we welcome this report. We actually welcome the Concord judgment. We must abide by it. We will fully participate in terms of making sure that we do comply. I do agree with our members that are there. Let us not be doomsayers. Let us come with concrete integrated plan, as my colleague said in the beginning. Very nice input there in terms of the plan and also the risks that are there. I fully agree. Let us get a plan so that we know exactly what we're dealing with. And also let us look at the history, what was done before in terms of the work. Maybe let us not start from the beginning. Let us look what has been done and make sure that we do incorporate that. And also, I will propose, Chair, that and over and above this work, maybe the IEC or the committee need to look in terms of the Electoral Act and check if there's any other areas which are unconstitutional. Maybe the IEC should be far ahead. They must, in their research unit on whatever, they should be looking into these things, because I believe that maybe we're caught our pants down. And you know, the voting is the fun, is a pillar of our constitutional democracy. So we need to look into this thing. We need to be technical. We need to make sure that, you know, we do checks and everything, because we must not be told by the courts that we're doing illegal activities. So there must be those checks. Maybe revamp it and make sure that everything is constitutional. And then we need to be far ahead. Chair, I mean, for example, over and above, I can think some of the things that you know, the IEC needs to be looking at, you know, making sure that they are actually far ahead. There are other issues in terms of the voting in itself, because people have been crying about the you know, qualities of ink. You never had, you know, a research that has been done, and IEC comes strongly and make sure that their research unit or that is that, you know, those things are done. And issues of ZEPAs not working, you know, those things. So the IEC needs to be very active to look into these things so that they do not find themselves on the ring side of the law. They need to be making sure that they look into these things every now and then. But thank you very much, Tess. Those are just my inputs. We are available as well in terms of, you know, to participate and also offer any advice and also maybe any research that is needed, maybe make our inputs to the Economic Freedom Fighters. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Deputy Minister?
No, thank you very much, Chair. Just two issues that I would like to raise. The first one is that I agree with Honorable Janji when he talks about immediately setting up a plan and a project plan to deal with this issue, because it is very much important that we do so. And as the IEC has also said, that the sooner we start, the better. The second issue is just to make a plea to the committee that we need to really work together on this one and really refrain from, you know, fingering each other on quite a number of issues, saying who is wrong, who should have done what by when. I don't think that's going to assist us. What we have here is a constitutional court judgment. It actually, you know, affects all parties. It affects society at large. So we must work together and just refrain from finger pointing and make sure that we stick to the timeline. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, I'm going to
Chairperson, I beg your indulgence.
Honorable Veteran Legota.
I'm sorry, Chairperson, to disrupt your progress. May I just say this? I should have mentioned to you that we of the Congress of the People initially in the past term did submit a bill, and of course it was not attended to. However, what I do want to underline now is that we would like to resubmit that, because we've been working on this and we've made huge amounts of progress. We do think that it will make a good contribution to the work of the committee and of the commission if we are afforded an opportunity to submit that document. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Veteran Nkota, Honorable. I'm going to give to the IEC to respond, and the minister will be the last to make final remarks, because he has been already Parliament has written to him to provide something. I think we'll go the route of Honorable Janji, integrated roadmap, IRM. So we'll talk about that as we close, but can we allow you, Chairperson Mashinini and the CEO, Mr. Mawabul, to provide some responses? I'm aware that you said you were there to give technical support, but as you can see, members expect a lot from you. Can you just give responses where applicable? Where not applicable, I think the integrated roadmap committee will deal with those kind of issues. Over to you, Honorable Machine.
Thank you, Chair. I think from the outset, one needs to dispel the seeming perceptions that we are saying the time given is not enough. The Commission is indicating that the next elections are 4 years away. Now, what we are pointing out that it takes 2 years, 24 months, for us to prepare for the election. So we are saying the 24 months that the Concord has given Parliament, it's a very tight time frame. We are not saying we have a problem that time is not enough. We were just outlining that as a tyranny and an inherent risk, and therefore urging Parliament to expedite the process that is before us. So I just thought it's important we clarify that point. And secondly, Chair, we as the Commission have indicated that we are studying the judgment. What has happened is, at the request of the committee, we've made ourselves and prepared what we provided as the preliminary view of the Commission. We are yet to deliberate in details and be in a position to formulate what is the position of the Commission with respect to the areas identified that will need to be addressed, as well as to be in a position to then identify in technical detail what support would be to provide to Parliament so that we can enable the work to be done. Now, the other point, Chair, is that there also would appear to be a misunderstanding of the roles. there are separation of roles between the executive authority and the Department of Home Affairs and the Parliament, as well as the Commission. The Commission in all the deliberations is but providing or offering technical assistance. The judgment is that Parliament must rectify. Now, Parliament makes the laws, so we are not overreaching as a Chapter 9 institution. We are pledging the support on the basis that we do have a technocratic capacity to assist, and we want to enable us as a country to be able to meet the task that is ahead of us. So by offering assistance, it's not that we are ducking anything, as other members and Honorable Gota and Honorable Chabane indicated. We agree with them and that understanding. And the other point, what we like to also point out is that the issue of combined election, we are dealing with national elections in 2024. The matters of the local government, those matters fall outside of this judgment and the discussion that we came here. The matters that relate to the local government elections, they are currently under discussion, and confidential consultation as required in law between the Commission and the Minister of COCTA. And now, what one would also like to clarify is whether why the Commission opposed or not or should not have opposed the matter before the courts. I think respectfully, Honorable Chair and members, we did point out that we were providing a view based on our understanding as the law stands. But the clarity that now we have received, we are saying we welcome it. And the law, remember, honorable members, is actually made by Parliament. We implement the law. Now, there's also the issue of that we in a position to indicate the matters related to the elections and the technical details, such as issues of ballots and the counting and all those matters. We would then beg for the indulgence of the committee that as the Commission, we would be in a position to provide a comprehensive clarity on the matters and the issues that have been actually raised. We've noted those particular issues, we've noted those particular matters, but at this stage, I think it would be premature to provide some of the details as a system that is going to take place is not yet known. But we do know that it will have implications to the various areas. So we were just indicating and pointing out technically what those areas are likely to be. But in subsequent engagements, we should be in a position to provide a lot more details around some of the issues that we presented here. Having said that, let me invite my CEO and the colleagues to see if there's any further details that we should then be presenting. And I think one of the issues is that was raised is also with respect to political party funding and all those matters. What we're pointing out is that in terms of the detail that we have at this stage, we do say there would impact on those things, but we need to then to be in a position to study and finalize and provide a comprehensive report. And I thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you. Mamabulo.
No, thanks, Chairperson. A lot of the implications and the detail around them will become apparent when we begin to address specific choices around the electoral system. I think absent the clear choices before is going to be a speculative exercise. Because
can you mute Chairperson Mashinini?
I was just saying that the content and the extent of the implication will be dependent on the choice of electoral system that is eventually adopted, as well as the modalities that underpin that system, whether you have additional ballot papers, whether you continue with the two and so on. So those things will be clearer as we go along. And then there was a question that was put by Honorable Rose as to why did we oppose the application. The reason is simple. Our argument was that the system of proportional representation does nothing, in our view at the time, that was untoward. Because Section 105 and Section 45 of the Constitution says Parliament must design an electoral system that in general results in proportionality. Our argument was that the system that we've had for 25 years had served precisely that purpose. So we acted out of conviction to oppose the application. We didn't say having independence is unconstitutional, but we said that was one of the options that the parliament exercised, and it had served the country well. I think it is correct that there are a number of other laws, other pieces of statute, which implicate political parties in one way or the other. The RPPF represented political parties' funds, the Judicial Services Commission, the composition thereof, and so on. All those pieces of legislation which make reference to political parties have to be revisited to ensure that they accord with the new system as may be decided by Parliament. The issue of the constituency offices, again, it depends whether Parliament is going there, is minded to introducing constituencies. We've not made a foregone conclusion, but in the event Parliament so decides to introduce constituencies, we will have to realign our local structures to have presence within the constituencies, only if there's a constituency element to the electoral system. The issue of the single election, the synchronization of elections. This is a matter that is before the Commission for discussion and reflection. The Commission has not finalized its consideration of the matter, but it is seized with the matter in its discussion. And, you know, our chairperson is correct in saying that the 24 months must be used well for us to be able to have enough time at the end to prepare for the 2024 elections. And the spirit of the point we're raising is that let's start immediately. You don't lose time at the end. You lose time at the beginning. So we have to start immediately so that we are not pressed at the end and give the IC the necessary space it needs to redraft, to rewrite business applications, to retrain staff, and all those other things that we have outlined. I think I'll leave it at that. I think okay. We've to answer the questions.
Okay. Honorable Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Aaron Mutwalid.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. Let me thank the IEC for the presentation and the clarity about the way forward. But Chairperson, let me start with Honorable McClure. He is calling for the IEC to make a bold statement. There is going to be no bold statement from the IEC at all. I don't know what bold statement they must make. If there's any bold statement that must be made, it must be made by members of parliament, as Honorable Lokota has said. Perhaps I'll ask members to go and reread this judgment. This judgment is not about the IEC. It's about parliament. The judgment is imploring parliament to go to the drawing board and make changes. You know, Chairperson, as I was listening, particularly to Honorable McClure and Rubos, you know, a deja vu just fell on me. In the year 2000, I was a member of the party liaison committee in Limpopo liaising with the IEC. The 2000 elections, which were the first elections of this type of system in local government. Advocate Lambani was sent to the province to explain to us how the seats are going to be allocated in local government from the 2002 elections upwards. When he finished his presentation, we all shot our hands up, and speaker after speaker lambasted him for what he said. And he just listened, then he asked whether there are members of parliament. And he found that almost everybody there was a member of parliament. In a very cool tone, he said, gentlemen and ladies, I am here unpacking the law you have passed. I'm telling you about your decision. This decision was taken by you, not me or the IEC. You are the one who passed this law and said seats must be allocated this way. Now, it's just occurring to me today that we are back to 20 years ago, 2000, not understanding the role of the IEC. As Honorable Chanji has said, the IEC cannot act on anything here until we tell them on what to do. If you tell them that this is what you must do, then they will come and tell you how much it will cost and what... or what systems it will need. It's not for them to decide for us. We must go and decide. Now, I'm puzzled by the questions from Honorable Ruos, which I believe are very unimaginative and uninspiring. Well, anyway, I'm used to him, as I told you the other day, always sounds like a jilted lover. I don't know who jilted him. I mean, this question... why did IEC or why did Home Affairs oppose? It's as if it's for the first time in court, in a court of law, that he has heard how cases are heard in court. Home Affairs, I was not there when it opposed, so I don't know their reason, but I'll simply guess it's common sense. It was their understanding of the Constitution, same as IEC. That's the manner in which they understand the Constitution or the Electoral Act. Maybe you should then have asked, why did Parliament pass an Electoral Act like this? Because this is what it's all about. Parliament passed an Electoral Act, and that Electoral Act was submitted to Parliament by Home Affairs Department, and after it was passed, it was given to IEC to implement. And when they were doing so, they thought they were right. So the Constitutional Court has just corrected them. And that's what the Constitutional Court exists for. So why would you ask for why did they do what they did? If we don't hold you back, Chairperson, if we don't hold yours back, he will then ask why did Judge Froneman give a minority judgment. He's going to ask very soon, why did he give this minority judgment? Or he may then ask, why did Judge Jasta give another judgment which does not come from the same direction, even though it reaches the same conclusion as the one by Matanga? So all I'm saying is, these questions he has asked here are a complete waste of time. He even then touches on the issue of Francis Labet and Mutandi. The Francis Labet and Mutandi report were not about Home Affairs or IEC, it was about Parliament. So, Chairperson, I just want members to understand who they are here. You know, it's like two clubs are about to play a match, and you ask the referee how the game is going to be played. That's the IEC. You decide on the rules of how the game is going to be played and all the relevant things, and you give them over to the referee to adjudicate. So we've got adjudicators here behind us. We must not run away to them and tell them to do our job. The other issue, Chairperson, which I want to touch again is even the issue of whether there must be a single combined election for local government, provincial and national, as was said by the economic freedom fighters. That issue is also an issue of political parties, not IEC. It's political parties that will decide that we want one seamless election for everything and instruct the IEC that we no longer want separate elections, we want one, go and sit and plan for this one election. As to when it will happen and all that, it's political parties. It's not going to be answered by the IEC Chairperson. So having said so, Chairperson, it's true. Our work is ready for us. It means a lot of hard work. It means a lot of sacrifice. And I'm also appealing, let's not be defeated before we start. The proposal by Honorable Janji that after all the plans have been put on board, we will check and see if we have to approach the Constitutional Court. Let's put that in abeyance and do the work and see during the course of our work. That is also provided for. If somebody has got to go back to court and say, Constitutional Court, this is what we instructed, but these are my problems. I think it's also provided for in our democracy. But let's put that in abeyance for now and go back and sit and work and see where these things put us. As Honorable Lekota has put us, it's a new era and we must embrace it and be excited about it. The proposals that Honorable Lekota said this party has got must be put on the table when the committee starts sitting. And they must say, these are our proposals, we have already worked on them, and let's see. And I don't think here is an issue of being in opposition or governing and all that. It's an issue of building the country together, and the Constitutional Court has shown the way. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. With your concluding remarks, they are very inspiring. And I think they are also very conclusive in nature. There are a few issues that I want us to elevate. One is the issue around the time frame. I think that, as Honorable Janji has said, the time frame must be determined by the work that we have put in. What this therefore means is that we've got to set the process in motion. The Integrated Roadmap Committee, Minister, which will be led by yourself, would have to put everything in motion. It is that plan which the Parliament requested you to provide that is going to determine whether we go to court and request the court that 24 months is not enough because we must speak about the empirical evidence when we approach the court on these issues. I see now you're using legal terms like kept in abeyance. I don't know why you're using terms of the used by doctors. Indeed, we will keep some of the process in abeyance until such time that we put the framework. And I agree with you that the process is going to be for the political parties. The IC, and what has struck me the last time I saw a CEO on TV, he said the IC was ready. The most important thing on my part was ready for what, but I'm happy that we can find that they are ready to provide the technical support. But we will need this integrated roadmap. Because once you say you're concluding in your presentation, the whole conclusion paints a picture that says we will need a lot of money, but we will need you to start to paint how much money is going to be needed on trends so that when we are a committee of parliament, we are able to take decisions, we are taking decisions on the basis of an on-trend amount that we've provided to us. With regards to the return date, I think Parliament is going on recess. I think when we come back from recess, the first matter on the table will be this matter. We'll want to come back and check how far we so that we're able to make the proposals that we need to make. With regards to the matter raised by Honorable McCord and the suggestion, yes, Minister, you're correct. We are going to leave no stone unturned. We are going to allow every political party, every civil society organization, even every South African who has a suggestion around which how we must deal with this matter to present it on the table for a thorough discussion. Because I have said in my opening remarks that we've got to start a conversation with our people, the South Africans, on how do we envisage this new era in the benefit of the majority of our people. So I think we'll have to take that route. And with regards to what Honorable Ross has raised, that I must speak for majority of the committee or for myself, I don't think the spirit with which we must run the committee meeting. You know, when the chairperson opens the meeting, he opens the meeting on the high note of issues that are taking place in the country, which are in the interest of the majority and which has proven scientifically by the majority that these things are working. The Command Council, as led by the President, has proven beyond doubt that it is able to deal with the challenges for us. The President himself has said there are issues of other challenges, but we have not lost it. We're in charge of the process. And that is how South Africans see the whole matter. And it will be responsible of me as a chairperson of a committee not to commend this work. And indeed, there are some of the challenges that we're dealing with, both as Parliament and the executive is dealing with. Part of our role is to encourage the executive minister and the work that we have done. Like I said before, that since COVID started, we have seen the Minister of Home Affairs up and down, answering questions, being at the coal face where our people needed you most. And it will be a mistake from the side of the chairperson not to commend that good work that the minister who have done under the leadership of the president. It would really be a mistake. So I think we need to have the spirit of building South Africa. And another conversation that we'll have some other time, it will be exactly a kind of society we want to build, because the society we envisage and want to build is where we are able to not to oppose because we are just opposing, but we are able to oppose because there is something that we want to build out of the opposition, but not because you oppose me because I'm from this party, you are from this party. The opposition must be a building block towards building a better South Africa that we envisage for everyone, so that we ultimately have South Africans being their own liberators. That is the vision that we have. So I think we have had a good meeting. At the beginning of the recess, we were going to start, but I know from the at the executive level, Minister, you don't go on recess. A lot of work may begin, and we'll appreciate IEC that you provide this technical support. This will include, among other things, all these things that you are saying, the options that are there. Providing the options does not mean you are choosing any of the options, but we are providing the options for the South African public and civil society movements and the political parties to look at and brainstorm. So that whatever decision you come up with, it's a long-lasting solution. It's a solution that we will not find any court saying. We have now, we must still rectify this and that. So I think for today we will have to stop at that. And thank you very much to everyone who participated, and our visitors, members of the media, members of Parliament, leadership of the ICS led by Mr. Mashinini. I think we are better off than when we started this meeting. We understand now better, but we will need to go deeper in terms of what may be the options and answer the difficult questions that are there. But this is a subject that we'll deal with in a more transparent way when we'll want a conversation with our people on what is the best for the country, South Africa. I'm closing this meeting now. Thank you very much for attending. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.